Off the ball rugby.
Yeah, it's obviously a incredible stadium. You know, obviously hearing from the Irish people that it's very historic, and not a lot of rugby games that are played there. And you know, obviously being fortunate enough to be one of the few rugby players to have played a game on Croke Park is very special.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Formula One Pod on Off the Ball, brought to you by KitKat. Hit pause, have a break,
have a KitKat.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the F1 Pod on Off the Ball. And as always, the F1 Pod on Off the Ball is brought to you by KitKat, bringing breaks to the fastest sport in the world. Hashtag have a break. So I'm joined, as always, by Kira to my left. Kira, how are you?
I am fantastic. I'm so excited to dissect some of this race.
And then we're delighted to be joined on the line by Chris McCarthy, who you will probably recognise if you're in any way a fan of Formula 2 or Formula 3. You'll know his voice anyway. Commentator extraordinaire. Chris, how are you? And welcome back as well to the world of F2 and F2 commentary.
Yes, thanks so much for having me. It's absolutely great. I mean, great weekend of F2 and F3, but I think the highlights were definitely stolen in Formula One by Lewis Hamilton. But yeah, a real pleasure to be here. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
No problem. Now we're going to dive into obviously the Formula One, but then we're very lucky here from an Irish context to have a load of interest in the F2 and F3 this year. So we'll definitely want to pick your brains about that later on. But again, as I don't think there's anywhere else we could start this week without, that's not Lewis Hamilton.
Were you expecting it?
That's a good question. I mean, I think at some point we were expecting him to take the win, but seeing him do it in the way he did was really great. And I think many of us were getting ready for another round of Russell versus Antonelli in what's becoming a bit of a boxing match between them, isn't it? We're just waiting for a bit of a crash to happen. But no, I mean, Ferrari pulled off a great strategy. The virtual safety car just came out at a great time. And Lewis Hamilton does what Lewis Hamilton does best. Got an opportunity and took it with both hands, and I think nice that he's done it in time for the British Grand Prix as well. I think there's a lot of excitement always when the British Grand Prix happens. I was at Silverstone yesterday, actually. You might have seen I caught the sun pretty heavily, and the excitement around Silverstone has grown even more. You know, people are very excited, an all British podium for the first time since, you know, 1968, and I think that's a fantastic thing to get all the British fans excited.
And not only did he win his first race for Ferrari, but he's now only 41 points behind Antonelli. He said nothing's impossible when it comes to him potentially winning the championship. Is it more and more likely now after his performance at Barcelona?
I think so. You know, the upgrade package that Ferrari bought clearly worked very well. I think Lewis demonstrated that in qualifying. But he's seems to be a lot more comfortable this year than he was last year. Last year, he was a little bit unsettled, wouldn't he? He had that relationship with his engineer that just didn't really work, and he didn't look comfortable at all. And that ultimately shown with him getting no podiums for the first time. But this year, he definitely looks a lot more comfortable. There's been debates whether that's because of things happening off the track in his personal life as well as on the track. But yeah, I just think he looks so comfortable in the car. Clearly, he's worked very hard with Ferrari to get the upgrades that he wants. And now he's got them. He's delivering in the performance. So yeah, I think so. Antonelli's never fought for a world championship title in Formula One before. Lewis Hamilton has on many occasions. And I think that could start to show as the season goes on. He does have a real good relationship with Kimi as well. Kimi was straight over to congratulate him. But yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out as the season goes on, once this battle starts to happen, which I really do think it will.
Especially now, because we're sort of referring to Russell as third in this kind of two-horse race, which would kind of be unheard of if we were still talking after the first race of the season, where everyone was saying, well, this is very much Russell's year.
100%.
But especially now with the narrative that's building around Antonelli, the momentum that he has, the fact that you have this 19-year-old driver and then Lewis Hamilton at 41 years old, competing for the world championship.
Yeah.
And the amount of records that was broken just last week anyway, this surely is now going to weigh so heavy on Russell. Not only are you fighting your current teammate, you're fighting your ex-teammate and the most successful driver to ever grace the sport.
Yeah, I mean, I think when Lewis Hamilton left, he thought he'd sort of got rid of him in terms of fighting for titles. But Kimi Antonelli is a generational talent. You know, Martin Brundle said that himself, and it's something that's been discussed since he was in karting and coming through the junior careers. You talk about records. Kimi Antonelli broke so many of those coming up towards F1. I don't think anyone could have called that he was going to take as many wins as he did in a row at the start of this season. But he's starting to show why Mercedes were invested in him from 2018, when he was just a kart driver, and why Nico Rosberg had an eye on him for his kart team at that time as well. So, I think George Russell, coming into this season, he's always talked about Kimi Antonelli as kind of his junior teammate, but now I don't really think he can do that anymore. He kind of needs a big weekend at some point very soon, be it at Austria or at Silverstone, to get the momentum going again, because it's clearly having an effect on him, and Kimi Antonelli is threatening to start running away with this championship with maybe Lewis going with him. So yeah, I think George Russell, for his own confidence, just needs a big weekend, needs to get one over on Kimi. We've seen them even at Barcelona, they had that little battle on circuit. Kimi got ahead before he came to a stop, and I think he needs another battle like that with Kimi, and needs to win it to really get the confidence back.
Between the two drivers and Mercedes, it's a good problem to have two really competitive, you know, drivers in a great car. And I'm springing on a bit of something on you here, Chris. It's slightly breaking news, but while we're talking about Mercedes, it's worth bringing it up. Apparently, rumours say, according to Ralf Schumacher, that Max Verstappen was offered a deal with Mercedes but didn't take it because of the money side of things. Do we see a potential future of Max in Mercedes? How would that work when there's two great drivers there at the moment? Is it possible? What would that look like?
That's a great rumor to have. Yeah. It's certainly been a discussion, hasn't it, before, you know, could Max Verstappen leave Red Bull? If he did, where would he go? Mercedes is first on the list. There's often been this talk of George and Max essentially swapping places, and I think if it were to happen, I think that's what we could see. Although Red Bull have some junior drivers doing very good things at Racing Bulls currently, but yeah, it would be a great problem to have, a great problem we've had so many times in Formula One, of two very competitive teammates. We saw it with Nico and Lewis, didn't we, and the great battle they have. So Mercedes have dealt with it before, and that would be a battle, personally, as a fan, I'd love to see. I think Kimi and Max are two of the most talented drivers we have in Formula One right now. So to see them go head-to-head in the same car would be, I'm all up for that, 100%. And Max, he's such a good driver, always pulls out good performances in the Red Bull when he shouldn't be able to. But Kimi is a generational talent. So to have two kind of generational talents going head-to-head, I think, as a neutral fan, that would be absolutely fantastic to see.
I agree.
And what's so fascinating about this most recent race weekend, where we saw Hamilton winning, is that we have Hamilton being a generational talent in his own right, and then competing against for championships with Max Verstappen, a generational talent, and now suddenly he's competing against the next generational talent. And you know, his longevity is something that's, I don't think we certainly have not seen in the sport before. I have a few numbers here. I mean, 19 years between his first and his latest victory, which is, I think, 3 years longer than Michael Schumacher and then Kimi Raikkonen, who also had these big long gaps. As you said, it's the first all British podium since 1968. And then at 41 years old, he's the oldest driver to win since Jack Brabham in 1970. We speak so much about what motivates a driver to keep going when you're kind of in your 40s. But obviously Lewis Hamilton is seeing a car beneath him that is doing exactly what he wants it to do. He's a fan of these new regulations in a way that he maybe wasn't of the ground effect era. This is kind of exactly the environment in where Lewis Hamilton is going to thrive.
100%. I mean, that 2021, we all know what happened at the end of the 2021 season. I think he needed a bit of time to process that, to get over it. And then the focus came on, how am I going to get that 8th World Championship? Ferrari, he always saw it as a long-term project. I think he knew that I don't think he thought the first year would go exactly the way it did, but I think he knew it was going to be a project where he worked with the team to help them get into a position where they can then go and fight for a world championship, and now he's done just that. And I think it's that 8th world title that he wants. I think if he gets it, you could argue that he would maybe then call it a day there. I think he really is in it to try and get that eighth world championship. And I think a lot of the majority of Formula One fans would be behind him to do it if he found himself in that situation. So I think nice to see him going head to head with Kimi as well. Kimi's always been someone that he's had his arm around in Formula One. So to see the two going head to head, I think that would be a really fascinating title battle, actually. And I'd look forward to seeing how that happens. They have had such a good relationship. So I'm sure that would still continue, but it would be great to see them going head to head for a world championship.
When Hamilton initially moved to Ferrari, my big worry for kind of him and his career was, well, you're stepping into a team with a very established number one driver in Charles Leclerc, who's been with the team for so long through the junior program and is now, like last week, signed a new long-term contract. And yet we're seeing this is a Charles Leclerc that hasn't won a race in quite a while, who hasn't been putting out the performances this season.
DNFs,
kind of crashes, haven't been putting out performances that we've come to kind of expect from him. And he's now seeing his teammate who joined only last year take over perhaps as the person that Ferrari are going to be putting their efforts and energy behind for this season, going into the European swing, firmly in the championship fight. What will Charles Leclerc be feeling now?
This is a really, really difficult moment for him, isn't it? It's a good question, because I think we are seeing the struggles and mental battles that Charles Leclerc is having on the track. I mean, he crashed at Monaco, both in qualifying and then in the race, crashed again at Barcelona. And when he jumped out of the car and walked away, you could really see that it was a defeated driver in him. And he's dealing with a Lewis Hamilton who's I think had a big impact in the upgrades that they've bought, and it's gelling with him so well. And now, you know, that the Ferrari fans are really all behind him. So this is probably the first time Charles Leclerc, since he's been at Ferrari, that he's had a driver next to him where the fans are really starting to get behind him more now, you could argue, than Charles Leclerc. So yeah, that's going to be a mental battle for him. We saw it was a mental battle for George Russell when he had Lewis Hamilton next to him. You know, we're talking about arguably the greatest F1 driver of all time, so to have that as your teammate and then continue your status as number one driver, it's going to be almost impossible, isn't it? So he really needs to convert a pole position into a win, and just get back on the top step of the podium. And to get some confidence back, confidence is a huge thing in this sport, and he just appears to be lacking it right now. So I think he could do with a good weekend next time out.
And then if we were to look at the action happening off track, we know that Gasly was given third place back at Monaco. Really surprising. We had Declan Quigley on last week and we said we weren't sure if this was going to happen in the first place. But he's been given third place back, if he ever really had it. And Red Bull and McLaren are now appealing this decision. McLaren said this is due to sporting unfairness and it's about the integrity of the sport. Do you think that anything else could come from this situation?
I think the stewards have backed themselves into a pretty tough corner here, to be honest, because I was very surprised at the decision. I thought it was quite strange, you know, when drivers have served penalties to then rescind penalties for Gasly. Yeah, it didn't really seem to make a lot of sense to me. Straight after the race, you could see Alpine were out measuring the gap between sort of pit entry and the pit line. So they were pretty set that the stewards had got this run wrong. But McLaren, you know, are arguing, well, our drivers made adjustments to and other drivers made adjustments to that. The Alpine drivers didn't. So were they just losing out the whole time? So, yeah, I think this is a tough one for them. Could this now happen at future races, you know, where drivers just decide not to serve penalties and appeal them afterwards? You could argue that could be the case. So I think they've kind of back themselves into a corner here. This is one of the strangest decisions I think we've ever had in recent history in Formula One. And I don't really know what they do next, to be honest. And I think they'll be thinking the same thing. So I think McLaren and and the other teams have every right to appeal this, because they followed the rules and have almost been punished for it.
Because it's been a huge gripe of mine in recent years, drivers serving 5-second penalties after the race or getting, you know, so we don't have the kind of the stop and goes anymore. So it's everything's decided off the track. But you're right. Surely if drivers are thinking, well, if a penalty ends up not being applied properly and we're going to be disadvantaged by serving it in race, then we're kind of getting rid of stop-and-go penalties and five-second penalties being served in the race at all. Because what advantage would it give the likes of any team, really?
100%.
Yeah, it's strange. I mean, in other, you know, something like Formula 2, for example, if the penalty isn't served, then it's actually extended to a larger penalty after the race. And I don't really know why that didn't happen, to be honest. But yeah, I never really saw why they should rescind these penalties for them. And you could only see it was going to lead to a lot of sort of chaos around the paddock, really, in terms of question marks over drivers. And look, we're talking about, you know, it's a small amount of points, you could argue, but that could be the difference in a place in the Constructors' Championship. And a place in the Constructors' Championship comes with a lot of money. So the teams have every right to argue this, and people might think it's over, you know, a podium place or just a couple of points, but that could be the difference in tens of millions going to a team. So it's certainly a big thing. And on a wider subject, what happens next when penalties go out like this? What do teams do? So they've kind of left that open for debate now.
Especially kind of coming into Austria, where we know track limits are always such a huge issue.
Absolutely. It's probably the worst circuit for that. I was chatting to one of the Porsche Super Cup drivers about that yesterday, and it's one of the ones where track limit penalties and qualifying in the race, it's as long as you don't get one, particularly in something like F2, then you're on for a good result. But you are right. It's what happens next now. I think that we only have to wait and see. But maybe the stewards are going to have to come out with a decision and a statement to quickly draw a line under this and move on. But that might be hard to do.
If we were to move on to F2 now, so another interesting race in Barcelona. So Alex Dunn is yet to win this season, but he came P2. It's frustrating, but he's getting closer. What is Dunn missing, do you think, to be able to snag that top spot on the podium?
I think at the moment, you know, he had a very tough start to the season, Alex Dunn. He had a couple of moments that he won't be proud of. You know, in the first race coming together with his teammate, he had a bit of a crash that he'll be very disappointed of at Miami, and then another incident at Canada. I think he's just had a couple of now clean weekends, taking the podiums. You don't need many wins to win a Formula 2 championship. As long as you can keep getting on the podium, keep getting in the top 10 in quali, you're going to have a chance. It has been quite a while since he last won. I think Imola last year, I think off the top of my head. And so he really could do with a win, but at the same time, I think we're starting to see him mature as a driver now. He has the pace, there's no doubting that. He proved that when he was out in FP1 with McLaren last year. I think the win will come for him. He just needs to be patient, and I think that's the approach he's now taking in his season. Just rack up the points and you'll be there at the end of the season. Ultimately, we saw a Rafa Kamara that was unbeatable at the weekend, and I think Alex Dunn did the sensible thing by accepting that and now waiting for Austria to try and get his win.
Because as you alluded to there, he has five podiums across the initial five races. Almost kind of more crucially, he's yet to qualify lower than P4. At this stage of his career, where he's had a full year in F2 already, and he's kind of joined now this Alpine development program, is consistency what they're going to be looking for, more so than I might win a race one week and then have a P8 performance the week after?
Yeah, I mean, we talk about this, you know, we talked about this at the weekend, actually. Alex Dunn, you know, he's clearly shown he's got one lap pace, which, you know, F1 teams want. Consistency is then the next thing. He's proven he can win races as well. And now he's starting to prove he can be consistent. And obviously, the other thing they look at is time management in things like feature races, which is pretty much where we're seeing him on the podium all the time. So, he's proving all of those things. The next thing for him now is to go and fight for a championship. Then the discussions will start to happen of him getting a seat with Alpine or someone else in Formula One. So, yeah, I think as long as he keeps qualifying where he is, he's going to be up there at the end of the season. Two or three wins in a season is enough in Formula 2. You really don't need to win that many races. And he's not that far behind. He's within 20 points. So one weekend or the next doubleheader can really change. He could leave as championship leader if he has a similar run of results. So, yeah, I think to be 2 points behind Kamara is very good. And I think those are the two of the names people had as the title contenders coming into this season. And he's right with him. So I think that's something he'll be very happy with.
In Formula 2, would your main kind of opponent, obviously your main opponent's always going to be your teammate. He's the first one you're going to want to beat. But is there an added element of you have drivers on the grid who are maybe vying for the same development program spaces as you, you know, who maybe have been in development program races with you? What's that dynamic like and how does that affect drivers?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Alpine have three development drivers this year, so you want to be the lead one. And when you get to Formula 2, you know that a good season here can lead you straight into to a Formula 1 seat or a Formula 1 driver development role like we saw with Leo Fornaroli. And that didn't happen until he was champion. So yeah, they're all very aware of that being the case, particularly Alex Dunn coming into a second season. Gabriele Mini's the same, second season for him. Both Alpine juniors, and they both want to impress now the Formula One teams. You don't necessarily need to win the championship to do that. As long as you're in the title fight, then I think that can be good enough to impress the Formula One teams. To then when we get to sort of towards Baku, I'd say that's when the conversations tend to start happening about who's going to be moving out of F2 into an F1 seat or a driver development seat. And sometimes you just need a big weekend as well. You know, if you go out there and get a really good win, like we saw from Rafa at the weekend, that sometimes is enough to then start, yeah, people start having conversations about you going to Formula 1. Alex Dunn's going to have one of those, I'm sure. And once that happens, then those questions will start. He's just had a bit of a stain on over him at times due to some of the things he's done on circuit, which I'm sure he won't be proud of. But those can easily be forgotten with some good results. And I think that's what he's starting to do now.
And we find ourselves very lucky here in Ireland nowadays when we're talking about motorsports, because not only do we have Alex Dunn in F2, we have Finn McLaughlin, who's in his rookie season in Formula 3.
Unfortunate race for him in Barcelona, coming in 26th place. Not great.
High tech overall just didn't seem to have the pace, and you know, all three of their cars were down the bottom in quali. So clearly, I think maybe they just didn't quite get the setup together. But great to see Finn on the grid. It really is. He's been accelerated into Formula 3. I mean, he got talent spotted by Red Bull through a weekend they did over in Spain, I believe it was, where they did a bit of a shootout between some drivers, and he got the Red Bull backing. And then absolutely, you know, blitzed F4, got a title and straight into F3. And they've got a history of doing that. They did the same with Arvid Lindblad. They took him straight from F4 to F3. And then we saw how good he did there. And I think Finn will, he's shown a lot of consistency. That was a bit of an off weekend for him, surprisingly. But I think overall, given his experience compared to the rest of the field, he's doing well to be with them. And yeah, he'll just be looking to get a top 12 now in quali at Austria, I think, get himself on the front row for a sprint race and go after a podium finish. So yeah, I think so far he's doing very well. He's staying with the field, which is good.
And F3, so everyone's next race is going to be Austria. They've already done testing. How important is that for F3 drivers? So like Finn hadn't had the chance to do a lot of these circuits before. How important is it to be able to get that on-track experience? You know, can that make a difference in the race, do you think, for these drivers?
I think so. You know, they would have done race runs. They would have done quali runs as well. People would have noticed that Barcelona, if you were watching F3 practice, by any chance, they spend most of the time sat in the pit lane because they've already done the race runs. So for them, they'll just go and do a couple of qualifying runs in practice, their only practice session, and then they'll go out in qualifying. So they'll be very comfortable with how the tyres are going to wear. I know I'm getting a little bit technical here, but they'll know how the tyres are going to wear over a race, and that that makes a difference into how they approach the weekend. It does also mean, though, you know, everyone's had the same experience, so the level of competitiveness goes up. Austria, we always see a close field, but it means one single mistake in qualifying can be the difference from being 12th place to 25th place. So, and I think we saw examples of that at Barcelona. So you need a clean run. Finn got a bit unlucky in quali. So yeah, it means the field is going to be so, so close together. One track limits on your fastest lap and you could be at the very back of the field. So we saw an example of that. Leo Fornaroli didn't even get a time in when we came to Red Bull Ring in F3. So yeah, that's going to be a thing that plays a big part.
When we're looking at the Formula 3 Championship and you have drivers such as Finn and such as Lindblad when he was younger, kind of being brought up so quickly into the ranks of international single-seating racing, what's their goal, I suppose? Is like the Red Bull idea for these young drivers to be managing them slowly, or is the goal ultimately always to just go as fast as you can?
It's a good question. I mean, these Formula One teams are always keeping an eye on the junior drivers. They want to know who's going to replace, you know, Lewis Hamilton when he leaves, Max Verstappen when he leaves. So they constantly, that's the whole idea between the junior programs, really. They're looking for who's going to be the next Max Verstappen, who's going to be our next F1 driver. And so they try multiple drivers out. And the pressure on a driver when you carry, particularly the Red Bull livery, I think, because that's the most famous junior program that there is, and the most one with the most history. You want to see how a driver deals with carrying that livery on their car. Naturally, fans who turn up to the race to watch and, you know, don't really follow Formula 3, they'll naturally have their eyes on the Red Bull car and will be supporting it. So some drivers deal with that pressure very well, and Arvid Lindblad was one who did that, and he actually got better. Isaac Hadjar was another. But some drivers then sort of go the opposite way and find it's a little bit too much pressure for them. I think if you can get that Red Bull livery on your car and start to improve, then the teams will read into that. You don't naturally have to be winning every championship. Isaac didn't win any championships, but he dealt with the pressure of being a Red Bull driver very well and showed very good consistency. And that's why he ultimately got into Formula One. Same with Arvid Lindblad. So I think that's one thing they look out for. And historically, some drivers have become Red Bull juniors and got worse, but others have got better. And I think Finn so far has dealt with it very well, and I think that's something that's noted. But that's really the idea behind the junior programs, really. They're kind of, it's like academies in football, you know, scouts going out to see who's the next best player, and you have to try multiple drivers out to find the best one.
And speaking of Red Bull, we obviously have the Red Bull Ring coming up as our next race. What are you looking forward to the most? I think it's going to be really interesting for F1 in particular, because it's such a short lap and we're going to have some really interesting dynamics, I think. What are you most, that's across F1, 2, 3, what are you looking forward to yourself?
I mean, Red Bull Ring is such a great circuit to go and watch. There's so many opportunities for overtaking, and I think with the new regs in F1, I think we're going to see a lot of overtaking in the first few laps. In particular, we could see a very close race as well, because the Red Bull Ring there's not a huge amount to the circuit, very fast corners and long straights. So with these new regs, I think we'll lead ourselves to some great racing. You go back to China, it was really close, the racing there, wasn't it? Australia the same. So I think we're going to see a very close race in Austria, and same with F2 and F3. It's as long as you're within the DRS zone, which still exists in those categories, then you're going to see a close race. And I think we'll see many people fighting for the lead, particularly in Formula 3, and Formula 2 will be similar as well. So track limits is going to be a thing, definitely. Yeah. Particularly in qualifying, I think when it comes to the main runs, you've got to get through those last two corners cleanly. But yeah, it's going to be very close. And off the back of what's just happened at Barcelona, there's going to be a lot of eyes on Mercedes versus Ferrari. And also, I think we're going to see another round of Antonelli versus Russell as well. So as sooner or later they're going to end up crashing with each other. I think
I think they came pretty close to it as well. You know, they were they got very close to each other there in Barcelona. It was really exciting.
Oh, I mean, it would have been quite ironic if it happened at the exact same corner.
ten years on.
But I think it's a matter of time, isn't it? There's a lot of places you can make lunges down the inside at Austria. We saw Kimi crash with Max, didn't we, on the first lap last year. So we could see it kick off there, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Are you going to be on commentary duty for F2 and F3 next weekend?
Yeah, absolutely. I will. And I've got to say, I'm very much looking forward to British Grand Prix as well. I think something special always happens there. Who knows? Is it George Russell's turn to have a special weekend? Possibly. But yeah, I think that's going to be fantastic as well. And the atmosphere is going to be unbelievable. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to them both, I think. But Austria first, of course, it's going to be great. This is such a busy time of the season as well. Momentum is a big thing across all the categories. And you really do see the difference in a driver once they start getting momentum at this part of the season, that they naturally go on a championship run. And I think that's going to be the same in with the F1. So I think Charles Leclerc needs a good weekend back. Kimi needs to bounce back, and also George Russell as well. So yeah, it's going to be who gets that momentum over the next few races now will naturally start to appear as the title favourites.
And someone that we've missed out, and I feel like I'm always being like, what about McLaren? What about McLaren? We had Lando as well on the podium. Do you see any kind of momentum coming from their side?
Hard to say. They've been a bit left behind currently, haven't they? You can see from the drivers that they don't feel they're quite there yet. So it's hard to say with McLaren. I think very much it's Mercedes versus Ferrari right now. I think Ferrari, it's easy to get carried away with this win because of the fact he was Lewis Hamilton and extending his record. Virtual safety car helped him. Antonelli came to a stop. We've got to remember that. So I think it's still Ferrari chasing Mercedes very much. The Russell-Antonelli fight is going to continue, and Russell needs to start winning. So, it's going to be really, really exciting, particularly when we get to Silverstone. That's going to be great.
Well, we're well into the swing of the summer races so far, and they're only getting more exciting. Yes. So, Chris, thank you very much for today. This is fantastic.
Thank you for having me.
No problem. And the F1 pod on Off the Ball, as always, is brought to you by KitKat, bringing breaks to the fastest sport in the world. Hashtag have a break. And we'll be back with you after Austria.
The Formula One pod on Off the Ball, brought to you by KitKat. Hit pause. Have a break.
Have a Kit Kat.